You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with Stu Wright, with Lizzie Doyle and with Kev Walsh. We're going to talk about Manchester City, whether we like it or not. We're then going to move ourselves along and we're going to talk about Chelsea. Manchester City then, we will start in this area and just get stuck absolutely in. It's sort of a game of two halves, Stu. It's not a massive game of two halves, but it's sort of a game of two halves. City are the better sides up until half time. We can see that, but Liverpool look consistently dangerous and they look relatively robust. From there, though, it just goes to absolute pieces, and that's what absolutely just drives you mad watching this team at the minute. They're so terrible when one thing goes wrong.
I don't know. I don't know if it's a bit of revisionism because I'm just so annoyed with them, but I've heard this a few times post-match of people saying, you know, we were in it in the first half. We took the lead, I mean, of course. But, I mean, I thought they were in it. Even though they weren't as good, didn't batter us in the first half as much as they did in the second half, I really felt it was just a matter of time before they scored. The amount of times that they were getting in, but just messing up the final ball, you know, you just got a sense of it was always going to come unless Liverpool changed their mentality into the game. And you know, we were sitting back trying to play them on the counter, but we're not very good at that. We're not built as that kind of team. And unfortunately, the team we are built as, we're garbage at. So, I'm not sure what was the way home, really. You know, the one... The thing that frustrated me the most, I think, was... When you can see a little bit of light, when you can see how you can damage them, and every time the ball went into Gakpo or Jota on the halfway line, and they did turn, they did hold it and then turn and run at them, City fell to pieces. They looked all over the shop, and eventually that's, you know, how we get in on two or three occasions. But we stopped doing it. I don't know why we weren't thinking, let's just keep doing that. Let's just make sure we get the ball to them too. Or certainly Gakpo, who can hold it up on the halfway line. I think technically he's really good. My only frustration with him is that he's not in the game as much as he should be, because he's really grown in stature and he's technically so good. And when he turns, he never gives it away. So let's just keep feeding him. But unfortunately, every time we'd get it in midfield, we'd do either one of two things. Be really, really casual and lose it within 3 seconds, and they just then pin us behind our fullbacks, who had now decided to move on because we had the ball briefly. Or we'd pass backwards, we'd bottle it, we'd just recycle the ball back, we'd go back to the keeper, and then we'd just put ourselves in danger all over again, either with a very, very dangerous pass out from the back, which they were really good on the press, City, you've got to give them credit, or a 50-50 ball, the keeper would hit long and we'd lose. And it was just, you know, on loop, just repeat in that first half, apart from, as I say, those little bit of moments where Jota or Gakpo could turn and run at them.
The goal, I'll come before I've been Kevin Lizzie, and the goal for me, Stu, showed what can work against them, what works really, really well. That when Liverpool do show a fair bit of bravery in that, you've got to work the space three times, and Liverpool work the space three times, and suddenly Jota's in on goal, and he looks after it brilliantly from there. And that was what was driving me mad watching it. Was lads, you've got yourselves lessons on how to do the first half. You've got yourselves lessons on how to do this. Nearly getting a couple of times before then, you've got to work it cleverly three times. But suddenly then they're everywhere because they gamble everything. You've just got to be good three times, and then there's loads of space to work with.
Well, you said a word there, bravery. Liverpool weren't brave. Liverpool weren't brave in that game hardly at all. And, you know, I don't really feel sorry for them. I'm really, really annoyed at them at the moment. I mean, a lot of them are pretty much dead to me at the moment. I'm really hardened over the last 24 hours after seeing that shambles. But there was no bravery, and I can't quite put my finger on. Maybe it's a bit of both. Maybe it's because they were a little bit cowardly, I think, in the way they played. But also, they know they're not very good. Instead, it's hard to be brave against Manchester City at their ground when you know you can't keep the ball. And you know the people around you can't keep the ball. They don't trust each other. They absolutely do not trust each other. They don't back each other. They don't like each other. Well, there was a, sorry, Neil. There was a first. There was a moment in the first half. I'm sure it was the first half. Where in front of me, they have a corner and a Kanji fronted Henderson and like chest barged him. And I thought for a split second, I thought, we might get a little bit of team, you know, spirit here. We might like, you know. No one came. Henderson was just, players just turn their backs and walk away. Eventually, Konate strolls over, but not for a case of like, are you pushing, lad? But more in a case of taking Jordan away. Let's not anger them. Let's not wind them up. Let's not make them out angry at us. You know, and it was like, I honestly, if you put that scenario 2-3 years ago, every Liverpool player would have been over. They'd have been, just last season, they'd have been over. They'd have been, you know, a little bit of, there's been a little bit of sign of fight. And by the way, I'll also say this on the matter, and then I'll shut up with it. If that had happened to any other player, by the way, the first person there in a heartbeat would have been Jordan Henderson.
Agreed.
So say what people say what they like about Jordan Henderson, but you know you can't accuse the fella of not having fight and not being a leader in that team because he would have been there and he was let down yesterday. And I just thought that was symptomatic of a wider problem in that team.
There's with them, Lizzie, the idea that they don't like each other. I felt like I was watching the second half where, you know, you begin to impose your thoughts on it, where I felt like I was watching a football team who were all working out who they're going to have a go at in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Not the idea of they're going to have a go at Manchester City now or anything like that, but where they were all strolling around. And I think that they look like they hate each other. As soon as one thing goes wrong, or more accurately, I think they hold it together pretty reasonably well. I take Stu's point on that incident there. And at least they all get around the referee on the Rodri thing. They're all desperate to get around the referee on the Rodri thing, led by Henderson there. And that was good to see that they get around the referee. But second half, as soon as that goal goes in to make it 2-1, it felt to me like they all went, oh, what's the fucking point there?
No one wanted to know. Like, nobody wanted to know. And it was even in that second half, and the reason why I say that is, like, when you looked at when Liverpool pressed, and for the people who are listening, I'm doing inverted commas, because there wasn't a press. It was individuals going to press. And as we know, that doesn't work because then you leave space in behind and the midfield's got to follow and the defence got to follow. And there was no one ever there chasing up that press whenever one would go. So, like, Robertson would go and, like, he might be, like, a split second just off it, but then no one's going with him behind him. Same with Trent, same with some of the four. And it was just, like, just wasn't there. No one was working for each other in the second half, I'd say. Because in the first half, I was looking and I thought the Robertson-Jota link-up was probably, that left side was probably our strongest side, the side where we were most likely. But that second half, none of them wanted to know. There was an instance where, I can't remember what the scoreline was at this point, but can you remember when Trent was like chasing down the keeper?
Seeing the video of it this morning, and he's just like, what the fuck's going on? But a bit of me seeing that and just thought, well, what the fuck are you doing, Trent? Have you been...
No one's covering him,
But what I mean is, why is Trent sucking upon himself to
I know.
You can see that and think, is right, at least you're having a go there. But a bit of me thinks, just get in position, dickhead.
Yeah, but because you're right back and Jack Grealish is having the time of his life. I mean, I haven't seen Jack Grealish have that good of a football game since probably...
Since
the 7-2, I feel like Jack Grealish had a better game yesterday, in my opinion. And there was just so much of that all over the pitch. And there was times where there was one where the ball was lost in midfield and like someone was trying to play the ball to Gakpo. And Gakpo just like was about 2 seconds too late to get it. And because of that, there was just no urgency about them, no aggression whatsoever. In the first half, there was glimpses of it with Jota. I thought Konate was the only one sort of muscling in and getting there and really trying to create that sort of feeling. But like, honestly, none of them had it throughout the game.
Second half is... it's entirely defined by the goal and Kev, the way they react to the goal. But the goal itself, I just can't get my head around it. You're away from home at the toughest place to go in the league. It is the toughest place to go in the league. I would point out Liverpool have conceded within 60 seconds of either the first whistle or the last whistle of a half against Manchester City and Arsenal three times within a minute of half time at Arsenal, within a minute of the first minute of the starting whistle at Arsenal, and within a minute of the starting whistle for the second half against Manchester City, which if anything doesn't make you think what on earth is going on. But it's mad, that goal. I keep watching it back and trying to entirely understand
where is everyone
gone? Because theoretically, you're meant to be able to see the 11 footballers, but it's like they're all faded into Scotch mist. And suddenly City, in a thin strip of pitch, a 5v4 against Liverpool, when we've just had the ball a second ago. And Kev, this is what's been doing me head with them all season. You're playing a game. You're playing a game against the best team in the country. Get to the hour mark. Get to the hour mark at 1-1. Just nothing daft, and they come out second half, and it's so daft, and then they do the daft thing, and then they all decide they hate each other, and then they stop trying. Basically, that's the second half.
Well, you could have just cut that from about half a dozen other shows we've done so far after matches this season, and just said that's the second half. We've lost a goal or faced a bit of adversity, and we've gone to shit. I think what it is for me, it's they've gone from being probably the most tactically astute and cleverest football team you've ever watched to fucking brains it. Like as you're saying there. Come on, you've conceded the one just before half time. Listen, City away, do you know what I mean?
And it's a great goal.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? They're going to have chances, they might score it. It's not the end of the world, but it's fucking criminal to be 2-1 down 60 seconds after the restart. It's just, it's moronic. It's a similar thing to Trent chasing the ball up there, like a fucking dog chasing a car, do you know what I mean? Why, go and do it in the right ways. And Liverpool, instead of going, let's just see, as you said, get to an hour and just see what they're thinking then. Don't just start charging up the pitch. Especially, by the way, when we haven't even looked that likely to score anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, we've been well on top and we should have definitely had 2 or 3.
In that 30 seconds, I mean, it's mad to have to talk about 30, but in that 30 seconds, the ball's in their half of it, but no one's really got it under control.
Yes.
Where are we all going? Where are we all going? It's all right, it can be in their half for a second. Where are we all going? Have the idea we're going to soak a little bit up it's just maddening.
It's, well, it strikes at being a team of individuals rather than a team when you get to that type of point, I think. Because, as you're saying, if the ball's under control, well, then you're saying, right, bomb on, get into positions and make them either move with you to allow space for somebody else or so you can get the pass. But if you're getting into the position and you're not even 100% sure your player's got the ability to pass the ball to you, that's, like, all right, if you're overcommitting against Bournemouth at home, it's one thing. Against Man City away, madness, absolute madness.
At 1-1, when you've just kicked off the second half. That's the thing. Like, again, if we were 2-1 down and you go, well, we've overcommitted there and it's gone 3 or it's gone 4, you go, all right, that sort of thing happens. If they're doing it at 1-1 and it's just the start of the second half.
Well, that's it. You wonder what's been said in the changing rooms at half time, because we used to be really good at half times, didn't we? It was a thing with Klopp that we'd have an issue first half, he'd rectify it, and we'd go out and we'd win games in the second half. You wonder what's being said there at half time for them to think, oh, this is what we need to do. 17 of us in their half and just leave the goalie on his own down there. Do you know what I mean? Well, who's made the decision to say, yeah, let's just go and absolutely steamroll for this first 5 minutes of the second half? Because whoever it is, they need a talking to.
It's going through it all as we get, you know, deal with the bits and pieces of it. Lizzie, it is a setback, and the pattern, no matter what the game is, of them dealing, whether they played relatively well or whether or not they played less well, you know, this is, again, you know, it's not quite as close to half time to the half time whistle, but you've got Real Madrid at home in there where it goes 3-2 and they go to absolute pieces. I'm still remembering the Brentford game where they were the better side and then the ball ricochets in off Konate's legs and it's like they never played football before. You go through this season over and over and over again, and there's so many moments where one thing goes wrong and they just do not look, they don't even look capable of recovering from it. And that is now for me, the biggest impediment they've got towards being able to even get near the top four, because you're not going to be able to play 11 remaining games and have nothing go wrong when the scoreline's level. It just doesn't happen in football. Things go wrong, mistakes. And again, the manager's always been one for mistakes. It's a game of mistakes. Liverpool at the minute are terrible, terrible when mistakes are made.
Yeah, and sort of conceding. So the Real Madrid game was the one that comes to my head when that happened. I thought, oh, here we go again. And it's that idea, like, obviously, that coming out of the second half and then conceding in that first minute, it's like when we go, it's that thing of about how many times we've conceded first in a game. So we've had this reset, we've come out fresh, bump, now try and get back from that. You're on the back foot. Their heads just completely drop, and it's like they just don't want to know. And the fact that, like, when that goal went in and it went 2-1, I mean, you were in the ground as well, Stu, like, all of us in that away end went, it's done. And that's, would I have said that about Liverpool last season, the season before? No. I'd have thought,
they go 2-1 down in the Etihad last season, they get it back to 2-2.
Exactly. And I'd have thought, And I know we were getting in with like Joss and stuff in the first half. There was part of me where I was thinking, maybe. But if I'm being completely honest, my gut was saying, this is the start of it now. How many is it going to be? That's what my brain was saying. And people can call me a pessimist. They can call me whatever.
Realist.
But it's based off events that have happened this season that have conditioned me to feel that way. And if we're feeling that as fans, what are they all feeling as 11 players on the pitch? And how does that seep into their mindset? And then I ask the question, then how does that change? Because it's a repeated pattern and it's happened so much. Like, that's what I'm saying, the fact that we're all thinking the exact same thing, it's hard for them not to. But I don't know how that changes. I don't know where it changes. And it's like, we can talk about the squad being a bit depleted. I mean, I look at that yesterday and do I think, my first thought was, at the point of 1-1, I'd say at half-time, really could have done with the Thiago or Bacetic there. That was the source of play. But do I think Thiago and Bacetic could have completely and utterly changed that game? No, not really, because
they've also been at the scene of crimes themselves, and it's worth pointing out.
But like, I feel like Liverpool weren't smart enough, and that's what I'm saying, come from adversity. Like, it was clear what City were doing. We know that Pep loves to play loads of centre-halves, basically at the back in the full-back positions. John Stones was flooding the midfield. He just kept coming in central, flooding the midfield, and we just got completely overplayed in that area. From that moment on of 2-1, in my head, I was just like, well, what scoreline is this going to end?
They need one to go for them, Stu. When Lizzie's saying what changes it, they need to have a bit of adversity and actually not be a gang of idiots immediately afterwards. They need to find their way through one. I just don't see when it happens, because they're now so much in that pit with each other, first and foremost, before you get to anything to do with the manager or anything else. With each other, they feel like they're so much in that pit of, you know, I just don't like these people. I don't like the way in which this is going. I don't like what's happening to me. I think it's difficult to sort of judge them at the minute, because it's not so much the idea of where they are, it's where they've fallen from. And I think part of why they're continuing to fall is because of where they've fallen from. They don't look to me like they're equipped to scrap it out. And you know, the old Klopp line when he first came in, we'll drag opponents down to our level and we'll kill them and all of that. At the minute, they don't look equipped to do that, because they feel like, hang on, we just want to be at our level. And that's what's happened at the start of the second half. They've come out like, we're going to play a bit of football here, boys. We're going to show, we're maybe going to be braver, we're going to do all that. Oh fucking hell, it's just gone 2-1.
Yeah.
And now what are we going to do? Oh God, and I hate him, whichever one of his teammates it is. And I think that's what you're like, lads. You just need something to go your way at some point, but it's not going to happen by accident. You're going to have to absolutely find it within yourselves and pull it up, and at the minute I just don't see where it comes from.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think what Lizzie was saying before, like, you know, how does things I don't think are going to change. I think we'll get flashes. We'll have moments. We had what we did to Man United a few weeks ago. They'll still have moments in this team, because they're great footballers, and you know, there is a muscle memory there, and you know, in the right conditions, on the right night, under the light, you know, things can happen, as has always been the case with this football team. But in terms of any kind of longevity, sustainability, I think I've now hardened, and I've found acceptance, and I feel a lot more peaceful about it, because I think we've loved these players and this team so much. It's really hard to let go of the memory of what they were. It's really, really hard to do that. But the longer this team stays together in this way, the more that we're going to fall out of love with them, the more painful it's going to be, and the more actually they're going to fall out of love with each other. So I'm not saying you've got to replace an entire squad, of course not. And an evolution has already started. Some players are now different than the players that were there 2 or 3 years ago. But I think there's big names there that I've been on shows, even in the last few months. I'll mention Fabinho, for example, where I've said, you know, there's got to be a way back for him. You know, we've never seen a bigger drop off and blah, blah, blah. And I think he actually has recovered to an extent.
A bit, yeah.
But do I think that will ever... No. I think to coin a phrase, the party's over. And I think for this team, and we kind of need to accept that. And it'll be the best thing for everyone all around to shake hands with a few of these and go, thanks for the memories. It's been incredible. We need to go again here now. This team, Jürgen Klopp came into this team in October 2015, and he found a broken team, as all new managers tend to do, really, when they come into a team that's broken. But that team then that went on, that carried on in 15-16, I think as a performance wise, and I think the stats will probably back it up, did better than what this current team is doing. This now, not in names on the pitch, but in performance and sheer statistics. This is the worst Liverpool team under the Klopp era, and that includes the very, very beginning. And then what that tells you is it's over and you now need to rebuild. And normally what happens is there, the manager goes and you rebuild with another manager. But that's not the case here, thank God. You know, we all still have faith in him. He still loves us. And he's going to have that opportunity to rebuild a team, to actually, in the same way Shankly was able to. Shankly had that moment, didn't he? Shankly had that moment when he was heartbroken, looking at players like St. John, knowing what he had to do. And we're at that point now. We are at that point, and that's fine. We'll all move on. The players will move on. It's dead hard. But I think we just need to accept that we need to just get through the season. I mean, top four, I'm not even going to entertain that notion until I'll look at the next time I look at the league table will be before the last game of the season. I'll go, is there any hope? You know, and then I might be, but overnight, it's just a case of let's just get through this now and please God, please that they are going to realise the importance of reinvesting in this team big time. This is it.
I agree with you on the reinvesting, but just want to put something back to you in that, like, what crossed my mind, obviously you're talking about the player, like getting new players and stuff, which is obviously important. And I was talking about how we basically need to build from scratch again. But is there not something in it which is a little bit of the manager? Because he, you know, he's not perfect. We're all not perfect. These boys aren't perfect. No, very clearly, in that, like, people, Van Dijk was awful yesterday, and people saying, oh, he's not the Van Dijk of old, and like almost just being really factual about it. These lads are all what, 5-6 years older than what they were when they started. Not only are they 5-6 years older, like, so in pure age terms, they've got 5-6 years of intense Klopp, all competition, football in their legs. So can they even play the way that we want to play anymore?
This is
what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's
like
the point.
What you said there about, I think it was with you, Neil, about the bravery and trying to come out the second half and thinking, let's play like Liverpool. You need to change what Liverpool are now, because
Do you not think there was legs
in that midfield? There wasn't.
But this is not a surprise that players get older. This has been in the post for 3 seasons, and we're reaping what we've sown for the absolute shit show that is our transfer policy for the last 3 seasons.
But with the players you've got now, I'm saying change the way you play a little bit.
I think we're a bit too late for that, aren't we? So,
but I think there's also a thing where you've got to run to the line now.
This is
because regardless, you know, for instance, Chelsea get beat yesterday, you know, in there as well. Newcastle and United are playing each other today. They can't both fucking win. That's the way football works. I've got nightmares about Michael Keane headers against Tottenham Hotspur to give Everton a 1-0 win. That's a little faith that you've got in Tottenham there. You know what I mean? Yeah. To go all the way through. Like, all the teams that are at Brighton yesterday, as far as I'm concerned, miss out on a decent opportunity to actually go, you know what, if none of the rest of yous want this, we'll have it. It's a mad 3-0 draw at home against Brentford. So I think, you know, Brentford themselves weirdly aren't out of the idea of them finishing in there as well. But Fulham get beat away at Bournemouth, but then everyone does that. But there is a thing, I think, Kev, where you're saying, but also the idea then of refreshing the players. I don't think it suits anyone to say, you know what we're going to do is we're going to throw the way we are playing out the window now for the remainder of this season to an extent, because we're going to go and invest and get some new ones in the summer. My attitude to it is, we've been working on the way this is the way we play. We've just got to play the way we play. If it's not good enough, then you then turn around to the manager and go, well, you've not actually picked what suits the way in which these players play. But we can't, basically, I don't want another fucking reset. Don't use the words reset to me. Just literally fight for each other a bit more.
But yeah, that's it. But the problem you've got is, it's been said about 3 times in the show, they fucking can't stand looking at each other. But it's the same in any job. Like, eventually, if you work with someone for long enough, you either think they're absolutely fantastic or every little thing they do grates on you. And I imagine some of them look at Fabinho and think, I fucking hate your face, you know. Honestly, you can't bear looking at him because he was fantastic and now he's absolutely shite. The problem is, though, it's so frustrating that we could sit here and we can all go, we've been saying for 4 years that you can't just run players into the ground the way that we play. You can't have the most intense style of play and also the longest serving players. The two things
spot
do not
on.
Go hand
That's
in hand.
Say, yeah.
You've got to refresh that squad. And I know I keep fucking moaning about transfers, but it's the answer.
No, you're right.
It's 100% the answer. You can't ask Jordan Henderson and Fabinho are probably going to play 90 minutes again on Tuesday. They're either going to run into one or two things: an injury or an absolute shit show of a performance. Like one where you're like, oh my God, what has gone on here? And the problem you've got is they're then probably going to have to do the same thing again next Sunday because we've got no other midfielders. But it's been clear as day for two seasons now that we've needed at least two midfielders, and we've signed none. And now we're talking about doing three in the summer. It's not, three's not enough. You can't play three centre midfielders and only have three fucking centre midfielders in the squad. It's fucking insane. And oh, so frustrating.
If they buy three, they'll have nine.
Yeah, but will he have nine? No, because Harvey Elliott's not a centre midfielder for as long as I've got a hole in my ass. He's an attacking player. He's way too slow to play in the middle.
They think he's a midfielder.
They're fucking wrong then.
I know, I'm just saying, they think he's a midfielder.
And they were wrong about everything else up to now with the midfield as well. James Milner, are we still classing him as a midfielder? So Curtis Jones, I like him, but we've had the discussion before. Arthur Mello fucking was on the bench in front of him yesterday.
They'll have Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson, the new three. Then they'll have Bacetic, then they'll have Jones, and we need Shutter Fabinho. So this is where this turns into, because you're going to end up in a situation where, because you want to fucking sell everybody, and then you're going to say they're not buying enough people, if you see what I mean. So yeah. They've got to keep hold of someone.
I know I'm being unrealistic, but my frustration is this point has been coming over the hill as clear as day for such a long time, and people have just been not looking at it. Like, oh, if I don't look at it, it's not going to happen. Fabinho was a great player for us, but he was always going to have a problem with legs. He was never the most mobile anyway, and he was doing a lot of running for a man in there. Henderson, we give him a 4-year contract. Did I want him to give us at the time? I probably did, to be honest, yeah. But now I think, was I being a little bit overly emotional there? Because I'm happy for Jordan Henderson to be in the squad as long as he's working his way down the pecking order towards a James Milner-style role. But the problem you've got is Thiago, I love him. But fuck me, lad, he's got to be your seventh-choice midfielder because he's phenomenal. But he plays four games a season. He's not available enough. You can't play an intense style of football with some of the players we're naming there. Thiago, I love the bones of him. He's a fantastic player to watch. But do you really expect to get 10 consecutive games out of him ever? Probably not.
You can't just sell everyone. No, I think I want
to fucking burn the whole.
I know you do. But like, you look at Fabinho, right? It's still mad to me that Fabinho is my age. Like, he's 28 and he looks about 35 because he's of how finished. Much football. But the thing is, right, that's down to obviously not giving depth in the squad over the years. But then that doesn't mean to say get rid of Fabinho. Like, you just need another Fabinho so Fabinho can fill in, and when we're playing two games a week or whatever. Like, Thiago will probably go at the end of next season when his contract's up, so that's fine. Like, you can't just get rid of everyone. Like, it's more about bringing in like for like, not like for like, but you know, the younger versions, and still having those people around. I know what you're saying, but I don't think it's rip up the book, start a complete fresh. You still need these people in and about to play. You know, Bournemouth at home, you play Fabinho, Bournemouth at home, you play. What, do you know what I mean? You can't just get rid of Fabinho. I'm a bit frustrated by it.
It's just the fact that it's been so fucking obvious that it's needed to do for so long.
I'm somewhere in between here. As I said before, we cannot actually get rid of everyone, and we shouldn't want to either. But I think there now needs to be significant surgery on players that have been untouchable. I mean, with Fabinho, for example, I think Fabinho at Liverpool is, I think that's done now, unless he has a positional change. I mean, an entire one for the rest of his career and goes centre-half. And that's when I'm not just going to be an auxiliary centre-half. That's when I'm going to be re-educated and because I think he has the potential to do that very well. I think he showed glimpses of that when he filled in the past. But alternatively, for me, Fabinho then needs to go to France, or he needs to go to Italy. He can't go to Germany. He can't go to another league.
But you wouldn't have him as like a backup if you bring in another Fabinho as player. You wouldn't have him to play your FA Cups, your Southampton, your home, whatever.
I'd sell Fabinho now. And I'd be going, right, my reserve number six, so probably my seventh midfielder, and the option would be Jordan Henderson. I'd be bringing in a new number six. I'd be bringing in two other midfielders as well, top draw. But I'd be looking, you know, we've talked about Bellingham, we've talked about Mount, but I'd also be going, and then a six, a specialist top draw six. And I mean, his backup would be Jordan Henderson, who then becomes like the James Milner of the team for the next few years.
But isn't Fabinho a better backup than Henderson at six?
I don't think
Henderson at six, Lizzie, especially as he's aging.
Honestly, it's your opinion, no problem. But I just don't think it's an option. I think, in my opinion, I've hardened to it now, and I think I've got acceptance around Fabinho. I also look at Van Dijk, and I think the issue with Van Dijk isn't necessarily just Van Dijk. Yes, there's been some drop-off, but the issue with Van Dijk has been that over the past few years, any Liverpool team that doesn't have Van Dijk in, it doesn't matter who else is there, Canate, Gomez, Matip, everyone doesn't trust the back two. People only trust the other defender if they've got Van Dijk alongside them. That's ridiculous. We're no longer there in that situation with Virgil. We now need to have a situation where there's genuine competition. We need to bring in a centre-half. I mean, there's talk about the lad on the free from Frankfurt. That looks great. You know, great. We'll allow us to spend money elsewhere then. But if we've got a genuine opportunity next year to go, do you know what? We can play this game without Virgil and we look boss at centre-half as well. I've got total faith in them. That would be great. We need a right-back. Not necessarily just to replace Trent, but one of the biggest problems with Trent is the fact he knows that no matter what, he's playing. It doesn't matter generally what, because the other option is James Milner. And so
But my problem on this is that Gomez starts at the Nou Camp in 18-19 in the run-in. In the first leg of a European Cup semi-final, he starts at right-back. So the point of there needs to be competition for him. Well, there is. It's just that the manager's not using him. When I look at the end of that, if you want to have a conversation around the manager and the way we've managed the squad, and you've got to be careful here not to burn what was good. But one of the reasons why the end of last season has done this team into the extent to which it does is the manager gets into a situation where he's just picking the same players over and over again because we're trying to win everything. So you end up with a situation where Henderson makes 57 appearances, Fabinho makes 49 appearances, Thiago gets played every game at the end of last season, and we're still going, where's Curtis Jones? Where's this lad? Curtis plays against Southampton when everyone's legs are about to fall off and does really well. My point here is, Gomez has played right back. If you want to have competition for Trent in the squad, he plays right back at times. Last season, he puts that great ball in against Watford, is it, or someone, for Jota to score the header. He plays right back at times last season. This season, we've not seen any of it. And this is my... You can say, I'd buy this lad, but if you then bought them and the manager went, well, Trent playing right back every week anyway, because that's currently where we are.
I'm not naming the lads. I'm not on Liverpool's scouting team. I'm just looking at... You mentioned Gomez there, and I think, well, no, because, A... He's fragile anyway, and playing right back for Liverpool is an incredibly exhausting. Yeah, no, but I don't think he's doing it to the level where he's convincing the manager he's a long term proper viable option instead of Trent. I think what you need.
He bought a right back as well in the summer.
Yeah, I know, but where is he? He's made
of crisps.
Exactly. So until I believe for Trent's development, for him, if he's going to stay a right back, and that's a different question altogether, but if he's going to stay a right back for his development, I actually think, because he's done it all at such a young age, what's next? Where's the next challenge? So he needs to have that, I think, to be genuinely pushed. And I don't think he's genuinely had that. You can look at Gomez or you can look at Milner, but I think Trent always knows, I'll get back in here. I don't think there's ever genuinely been any threat to that over the last 3 years, despite the fact he's had a lot of unfair criticism, I think, nationally. I also think locally we've also been a little bit soft as well, because we want to put our arm around him and we know how good he can be. He's an incredible footballer. But actually, I want to see him get to his absolute peak. I want to see him pushed to that height of his potential. And I don't think without genuine competition, he's going to rise. That he needs another challenge.
I think a lot of this is structural, though. Like, again, it passed the way we play, because he's so important to the way we play. You've got to get him on the pitch for those little bits and pieces. But also, I think we've changed that a little bit as well. I'm quite... Like, a lot of what we're talking about here, and as I say, I think it's important not to say the manager doesn't get a free pass. No one wants the manager to go anywhere, but it's important to say the manager doesn't get a free pass.
Right.
I don't think the manager having a very good season at all.
Right.
And I think there's bits and pieces where we've changed or we're trying to change what it is we're doing. So Kev's, for instance, on a Harvey Elliott, and I get why, because I don't like seeing Harvey Elliott in midfield either. But we've been spending, I'd say now 18 months, looking to get that right-hand side of midfielder even more advanced into even more of an attacking position. That's a structural change. So then it doesn't suit a more traditional type midfielder that we'd say. And then that leaves Trent exposed.
We've got the perfect right-sided midfielder in our squad, but the poor fucker's playing right-back and he's doing fucking 5,000 miles a game. No wonder Trent looks pissed off. If I was him and if I was Bellingham, I'd be looking at it thinking, if I go and play there for 5 years, wow, I am going to have some miles on my clock. And Trent must be thinking to himself, I've won everything. But he's 23, 24, something like that. He's still so young. He's got 10 years. Possibly ahead of him, but not in this team. There's no way he can play with the intensity and with the...
In that position,
yeah,
do you mean?
Yeah, in that position. You can't ask him to... Well, I suppose you can ask him to do whatever you want, I suppose, but if you played him in that four, in that midfield where Harvey Elliott bit is now, he's as creative as Harvey Elliott and probably more so, and he's 10 times more athletic. He's exactly the type of midfielder we're looking for.
He'd get eaten alive.
I think you're absolutely underestimating him. I know people
tell me that. I love that I might be underestimating. What I remember is, the thing that's in my head, I always said, Gerrard can't play 10. He's not got the subtlety for it. And then you gave him a run, he could play 10, if you see what I mean. I always thought that genuinely. My thing with Trent is the amount of football you've got to play there on the half turn, little touches. He's not got that De Bruyne locker of the ability to get away from a man, to beat a man, to go round one and create the space for himself. We create space for Trent all the time. Part of how we play is to create space for him to work. Can he create space for himself?
100%, yeah.
I'm happy with you. I mean, Jesus, if we did that and I was wrong, I'd be fucking delighted. I just think that's my concern.
I honestly think people are absolutely underestimating how much of a phenomenal footballer Trent is. You know, he's absolutely...
I think he's incredible.
He's absolutely brilliant. And he was a midfielder when he was younger. He got shoehorned into the side. I'm not sure about the six thing. I see him, his career progression, I could really see a world where he goes forward, a la Gareth Bale. The way he went, he starts off at left back, went left wing, and ends up basically playing up for us.
But he was dead fast.
He was dead fast, yeah. But Trent's dead athletic. Trent can cover the ground, he can tackle, he can close people down. He's got a phenomenal passing range on him. Yep. But also, he's clever. When he gets into them positions further forward, the reason he gets so many assists is because he knows what he's doing. He's not fucking soft. Getting him into them positions is costing his legs because he's got to get all the way up there and then he's got to get all the way back every fucking time. Imagine if he just had a little bit.
Why do we get a midfielder to do the cover? Because that's what worked when we were so good and the full backs were pushing up.
You're making my argument at six.
Do you know what? Ironically, he'd be greater doing, and this is the best of both worlds, really. The way John Stones was played by City yesterday.
Exactly that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Playing six,
but slotting in at right back. You know, so coming from that right back position. Yeah. You know, that Lahm position as well that he did at Guardiola at Munich. But in a double pivot like that, not on a single. I think in a single six. As a straight six, I think he could be exposed on a turn.
But we've been playing a double pivot now for 18 months in the same way we've been moving the attacker on. So we keep talking about, and this goes back to, I can't believe we've ended up here because we're going to be talking about the City game. But we keep talking about the idea of, for instance, who's going to be the six. At the minute, we don't play one, we play two. When Thiago, and all the way through last season, Thiago stays level with Fabinho all the time. Maybe he goes a little bit higher, but he swap. And also, the manager's always said, I don't believe in it. You know, whether we like it that he says it or not, or even believe him. He says, I don't believe in holding midfielders. Everyone plays midfield and everyone goes forward and everyone comes back, and that's the way in which you play it. I take your sort of who's going to cover the six, and I take your sort of we need to go and buy a six. I think in their heads, I don't think he's ever wanted to play with what we sort of see as a pure six. And we can think that that's wrong, and this is back to the idea of you have to agree with them all the time. And that's why for me,
we won the league with one.
Sorry?
We won the league with one.
We did win the League One. It was firstly Fabinho and then it was Henderson because Fabinho gets injured for a fair chunk of that season. It's the two of them in there.
But we played structurally as a single six. And we won the Champions League and we won the league with that. We had our best Liverpool team under Jürgen Klopp.
And what
have
Man United changed?
He's changed it. The manager's changed it.
I think he's changed it because he's seen last season, as we all saw, Fabinho wasn't the player he was. And all of a sudden, Thiago was just getting. And Thiago's got everything in his locker. You know, he's played at
I think he's changed it because he wants to change it.
He may well have done, but from what my eyes was, it was more out of necessity because, hang on, we just need a little bit more cover here. Just a little bit more help for Fabinho because we're getting a bit more exposed. Because Fabinho's drop-off started last February.
I think, but
if not earlier.
But he was changing it before last February. He's changed it because he wants to change it. I think this is really important to give the manager agency. The manager gets, you know, he fucking runs club. He's changed it because he wants to change it. So if you don't like, for instance, if you don't like what Elliot's doing, the manager's sorting that out. If you don't like the fact that Trent's role's different, we've now got a long enough body of evidence of this. Like, it's 2 years. It's 18 months to 2 years. So he's changed it because he wants to change it. And I think that's... You've got to work out where you're making your peace with that because that's the truth of it. See what I mean?
Yeah, but I do think, you know, you can give him agency, but as any kind of manager, as any kind of leader in an organisation, you're making the best of the resources that you've got. And if you might well be able to say, there's truth in both things there. If you might be able to, might say that he did it because he wanted to change it, but he wanted to change it because he sees as well there's a problem. And he's got a solution in Thiago that's he's a Swiss Army knife midfielder all through his career. And as he's got older, you know, he's more naturally inclined to be able to control the game from that deeper position. So it does give Fabinho a little bit of help. Otherwise, if he was just looking to have Fabinho, to have Thiago back towards a sixth position, he was doing that on his own at Bayern Munich. And Klopp absolutely, if you look through the comments by Klopp long before Thiago came to Liverpool from his days at Dortmund, he absolutely adored Thiago.
Yep.
He absolutely would, you know, Thiago has been a pet project dream of Klopp's to get for a long, long time before he came to Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's not simply, I don't think it was just simply down to the fact that he wanted a double pivot. I think there's, he wanted Thiago, and then it's what are we doing with him? And then actually, simultaneously, Fabinho was dropping off.
I see. But I don't disagree with your points. But I think he knows if he's buying Thiago, he's creating a double six situation, and he's done that deliberately and willingly. And he's also got the agency if he wants to decide to move Fabinho on. But my point again, it's important to say that for me, this whole thing is not. I'm not trying to sort of be right or wrong. I'm just trying to say the manager gets to manage, and this is a really key thing here. And he has been managing for a long period of time, and he's been part of these decisions that's led to this situation.
50% of managing, it might be like trying to aim towards your vision, but the other 50% is problem solving.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's, there's been a lot of that because he's not got a bottomless pit of cash like, you know, the team down the road. He hasn't got that. So I think, you know, Kev was saying before, this has been in the post for a while. He had to prioritise where he can spend while Liverpool have been building a new stand, building a new training complex, blah, blah, blah. I think he's had to prioritise. And, you know, he's very good at problem solving. I think the Liverpool team that nearly won everything last year wasn't as good as the one that won the Champions League or won the league.
No,
at the end of last season. You know what I mean? So I think he's been incredible at problem solving, but you can only do that so long before actually
needing
a bit of help.
Feels rubbish that Liverpool are putting him in that position, though. You use the word problem solving and prioritising. And listen, I don't want
to get to FSG out.
No, I don't want to be in a position. I don't want to be in the Man City position as a Liverpool fan. Right. However, I feel like we are in a position where we should be given this man who has brought this club so much success and put them back at the absolute top of the world stage and made this company look so good. Like, we've got to be providing them with more resource than just prioritising and problem solving. There's got to be more.
Totally
to it. It's unfair to that man who's give everything to us, who's come from a country, had never lived here before, didn't know much about the city, and has embraced us all. Like, he deserves more than
that. He's not perfect. He's made mistakes. I don't think he's had a great season, but I tell you what, if he was to leave Liverpool at the end of the season, we would all be devastated. There's no one I want Liverpool to take into the next 3 to 5 years than him. So I think I think mentally you've got to go, if this was now a new manager coming in, there'd be significant funds thrown at this, the Woods. And I think we can't use the excuse of we're just maintaining him, but just by maintaining the status quo and slight evolution. No, there needs to be, and I know you don't want this word, I don't want it in the grander scale, a reset, but there needs to be an acceptance of, all right, some of the key players that this team has been built around, they just need some big conversations about how to help them. Like I said, competition for Trent, competition for Virgil, rethinking that midfield. And I do think that there's something in the post up front to be thinking about, you know, and I know that's not going to be dealt with this year, but I'm looking at how we've tried to solve that problem with some of the purchases. And I've said on shows before, I'm not convinced. I see problems in the future there. So I think if we don't address this now, you've already, the thing that really concerned me, first time you heard Alisson speak out a couple of weeks ago. If we have another season of this, he won't be there the season after, because he can go anywhere in the world. At that point, then you start to worry about losing your best players. Exactly. So now is the time.
What are we going to do against Chelsea? They're also rubbish.
They're shit. They are absolutely shit, but unfortunately, so are we. I think
whoever scores first wins the game.
It's big McTable.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And again,
I think that's a real problem, but I think whoever scores first wins the game.
I don't know whether I'm being unrealistic, but I still see a way where we beat them. I really do think that we can go to Stamford Bridge and probably win 2 or 3-0 because they're crap. But by the same token, does anyone here think we can't go there and lose 3-0? We can see 3 goals every week now, don't we? It's absolutely mental, the amount of goals we can see. The worry is we've got them and then we've got Arsenal on Sunday. So I mean, you could easily come out of this run of games with 0 points, and it's just that then your ass starts to think, wow, where are we going from here? Are we going to win against Chelsea? Fuck knows.
Who would you drop?
All of them. I'd play you. I'd drop Naby Keita again. just to get shut of him, just to get Nabby into the thing. The problem you've got is there's not that many you can drop because we haven't got any options. We've got the defence picks itself because who else are you going to play there? The midfield.
I would, if you throw Gomez in at right back, would you go, I don't like that. I'd be fine with throwing Gomez in at right back. Without being about dropping Trent, I'd be fine with throwing Gomez in next to Van Dijk. I'd be fine if Gomez plays instead of Van Dijk. One of the things that I think happens yesterday is I think it becomes really hard the way we've slaughtered some of the other players this season to then go, well, it's not like it's any better when these other fuckers are back. If you see what I mean, like genuinely.
You say that, but we're giving Sten stick and we're saying that he's, but we're not giving him stick, but we're saying he's having a bit of a tough time of it. But my goodness, has Joe Gomez had some tough times exactly. This season? He looks absolutely devoid of any confidence. So would I be throwing him in against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge? I don't think I would be, you know. So before you know it, I definitely wouldn't be putting the Greek in at left back because I just don't think he's very good.
It'll be Robertson because he pulled him off, didn't he, at 60.
There you go.
That's so, what those changes meant. Look,
that's it, isn't it? So again, you're asking who gets dropped. And you can't drop players if there's no suitable replacements. And if it's all right saying, well, the ones that are playing are not playing very well, but the ones that are coming in could well be worse. And we're going away to Stamford Bridge. It's not like we're playing a poor. I know they're in a bad run of form.
We've got but terrible form at Stamford Bridge, yeah, haven't we?
Chelsea are still Chelsea. Do you know what I mean? So I don't see a world where there's that many changes because we haven't got that many options.
I think actually it's been a while since we've lost there. Stamford Bridge.
But have we had much success in terms of winning?
I think we win there in the COVID season. We win there in 1920 because we won everywhere in 1920. We draw to all there last season.
It's a very draw. We draw a lot with Chelsea recently, I feel, is what I was.
I will get the actual information while Stu says what. Who he's dropping? Stu, who are you dropping?
And options are limited, Daddy. You know, to be able to drop him. It does. My take on this is two poor football teams will play a terrible football match. We'll either win, lose, or draw, and it won't tell us much either way. Anyway, you know, at the other end of it. So I'm very much like, just to get through the season now, have a look at the league table, one game to go, see if there's still something to play for, and then I'll be up for it. Yeah. But other than that, it's a case of just get through.
We've lost.
I would love to see a bit of fight. I'd love to see.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
That would be great. That would be lovely to see them backing each other and, you know.
But that's probably going to be Arsenal alone, not Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, probably.
In my
opinion. Yeah, I think that's probably more like it. Wouldn't be surprised me. We got beat at Chelsea and then turned over Arsenal alone. And none of it is kind of meaningful. None of it now.
It's a nice time. Isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, I
had a lovely day yesterday, by the way. Didn't let them TV spoil my day.
Yeah. I've got a nice big Sunday planned for Arsenal home, so I'm all right with if they give me a nice day out for it. I think we've only won three away games all season, haven't we, in the league, if I'm right in saying that. Three. So it's
they were good, though.
Yeah, they were
really...
Do you
remember them?
Yeah. Spurs, Villa and...
Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, as a ball.
They're all fucking top half.
Yeah, lovely. So...
Well, fuck now against Chelsea, they've gone bottom half.
I was going to say, it's a big... It's a battle for eighth, this. In terms of who you drop, the fact that Chen plays 90, listen, he might throw in a Milner at right back, he might throw in a Gomez at right back. I think he'll keep Elliott in the midfield. I think the midfields will stay the same because what other options have we got? Milner in midfield, but you can't do Milner, Henderson and Fabinho. So if Milner's in, probably Henderson gets dropped.
The front three,
I think probably Nunes maybe starts over
Jota. I'd love to see him start Jones.
But Jones didn't even make the bench.
I know, but I'd love to see him start Jones.
Wouldn't we like to see Arthur for the laugh?
Absolutely fucking not.
What else have we got left to see this season?
What is the point of him? I don't understand. If he's on the bench, bring him on.
Fuck knows.
If we're going to have him on loan, play him. Or just don't have him on the bench. I'd like to see
him start Jones, in all seriousness. I think you've got to...
How likely is that, though, if he hasn't put him on the bench?
But the point about this, though, Kev, is that if we're saying, for instance, Stews, let's just fucking get through and see the other side, let's just give Curtis Jones 10 games between now and the end of the season and make a fucking decision if we're selling him or not.
I agree with what you're saying, yeah. But how likely is it?
I don't think it's that likely, but this is an example of me disagreeing with the manager. Let's fucking watch Curtis Jones play football for a bit and then go... All right, fuck him off then. Or go, you know what, he's useful. Let's persevere.
The manager might say to you, though, well, do I want to put Curtis Jones in, who's a 20-year-old player who I think has got a big future, into this team, which is having an absolute...
He's got to fucking pick him at some point.
But he definitely has.
He didn't pick him last year when they were flying.
He'll probably do Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know. Oxlade-Chamberlain comes on for X amount of minutes. He's
Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Wouldn't surprise me. You know,
I'd like to write a book on Oxlade-Chamberlain's.
The games
he's been picked for Liverpool in the last two seasons because they make no sense to me at all. He looks like absolutely bombed out and then turns up at Madrid. Then he rocks on the pitch at the Etihad. Maybe the manager just wants to play when it's dead hard to do his head in or something because it makes no other sense to me. Scores a goal away at Brentford, gets one more appearance away at Brighton, gets completely bombed out, comes on against Real Madrid. In the meantime, I'd like to see him start. I genuinely like to see him start Jones because I think you've got to. And I take your point of, well, he's coming from nowhere then. But this is back to it, if you're saying, well, they're all. If he's coming out afterwards and saying, I basically hate them myself now. Well, pick one who wasn't there.
Yeah.
Pick one who you've not had to hate for a while and see if you can get the opportunity to hate him as well.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Something for everyone. By the way, we've only lost once at Stamford Bridge in the league since 2013.
Oh, sorry about me.
December 2013.
Sorry? Are you saying we're due with this?
Possibly we're due. We've lost to Chelsea. We lost in the fifth round of the FA Cup there. We lost in the League Cup there. They beat us in the League Cup at Anfield. So it's not like it's absolutely perfect. But the only time they've actually beaten us in the league was May 2018 when I think we were going for the European Cup and Giroud scores ahead of it, if I remember rightly.
It was a non game, that one, yeah.
Well, we were just sort of, we were going through the motions a little bit. They are shite. It's a key point to say that they are shite at the minute. He might be sacked before it kicks off.
It's a case of who's worse in it on tomorrow.
I think it's who scores first.
On Tuesday. No, I mean, I think it's a case of who's worse out of the two.
You doing anything mad?
No. Do you know what? I've changed my mind a little bit. I've just thought, like, if this is the end for this team, for some of them, do you know what? Have a final hurrah. And if you go down fighting. Make us love
That's
you.
What
one
I want.
More time. Make us just love you one
again.
More.
They haven't
absolutely.
Had fun since. I mean, Man United. I thought they're having fun again, and it put a smile on our face and it put a smile on their face. I feel like I haven't seen a smile on the face enough this season.
The big thing on, you know, you said before about the not as good as 2015-16. Yeah. They don't currently look capable, and I mean this in every single way. They don't currently look capable of going to Norwich and winning 5-4.
Yeah, that's right.
That's my biggest problem with them. If they're going to be a bit crap, which they were in 15-16, at least look like it's a laugh. Yeah. And at least look like there's a plan. And that's what I mean about let's have a look at someone rather than go through the motions of all the grown-ups are playing and they all hate each other. Let's just have a look at someone and then go all right and go from there. Yeah. And that would make me happier. At the same time, though, who thinks they're beating Arsenal?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Sam Overtime producer, big time.
It genuinely wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, big home game. And I think they've got the crowd behind them. People will just want a nice day. Like, it's Easter Sunday. We're all off the next day. Everyone will be bang up for it.
I'm not. I'm fucking in here doing more of
this
shit.
Well, I'm having a lovely time. So, yeah.
I'm not. Anyway, fuck off, Liverpool. That's the Anfield Wrap. Sports Social Podcast Network.